following episode of K-Boys was recorded at 12:41 a.m., February 20th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
The people in the government who were voted into power are lying to us. And us kids seem to be the only ones who notice and are prepared to call BS. Companies trying to make caricatures of the teenagers nowadays, saying that all we are is self-involved and trend-obsessed, and they hush us into submissions when our message doesn't reach the ears of the nation. We are prepared to call BS. Politicians who sit in their gilded House and Senate seats funded by the NRA telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS.
Hi, guys. This is K, Voice of Resistance, and I am your host, Kelly. Washington is quiet now, as Congress is out for a whole week. Again.
Great work if you can get it.
Our president has spent a sad weekend shut in his Palm Beach, Florida resort, forced to stay off his precious golf course because the optics of him golfing on the doorstep of the school where massacre just took place would look bad.
Sad.
That only lasted till Monday, though, and well, students were attending the funerals of their classmates. He hit the greens. Hard at work, being the president. Over the weekend, though, Donald decided to make himself look bad anyway, and outdid himself in a long series of tweets, desperately trying to make his case that there is
absolutely no collusion.
Okay.
Everybody knows it.
Please.
It's a Democrat hoax.
Shut up, Donald. Somebody's getting nervous.
Okay, now I want to introduce Emma Gonzalez.
We are going to be the kids that you read about in textbooks. Not because we are going to be another statistic about mass shootings in America, but because, just as David said, we are going to be the last mass shooting.
There is a new movement brewing in America.
If the president wants to come up to me and tell me to my face that it was a terrible tragedy and how it should never have happened and maintain telling us how nothing is going to be done about it, I'm going to happily ask him how much money he received from the National Rifle Association.
A new voice that has joined with and breathed new life into the cynical, beleaguered anti-gun debate.
It doesn't matter because I already know. United States in the 1.5 months in 2018 alone, that comes out to being $5,800. Is that how much these people are worth to you, Trump? If you don't do anything to prevent this from continuing to occur, that number of gunshot victims will go up and the number that they are worth will go down. And we will be worthless to you.
And just as young baby blood has given evangelical dinosaur Pat Robertson life since the days of the Inquisition, it is the young who are bringing to life what seemed to be a dead, or at least hopeless, debate.
To every politician who is taking donations from the NRA, shame on you.
Mere days after surviving the 9th deadliest school shooting in United States history, students Delaney Tarr, Emma Gonzalez, David Hogg, and Cameron Caskey have stepped up and organized against gun violence through their pain. These kids are passionate, well-spoken, whip-smart, and motivated. The four founded the Never Again campaign in the immediate aftermath to break through the hopeless circular conversation of gun control v. gun advocacy and to instigate widespread changes. These students are also leading the March for Our Lives on March 24th in Washington, D.C. Their goal is to ban civilian ownership of semi-automatic weapons and automatic weapons. In addition to Parkland student activists, the march is organized and supported by Every Town for Gun Safety, a nonprofit organization which advocates for gun control and against gun violence.
Like them, donate, and join them.
Walkouts have also been organized, including one planned in part by the Women's March organizers. The first will happen on March 14th, marking 1 month since the shooting. The event calls for students and faculty to walk out of their schools at 10 a.m. local time for 17 minutes. 1 minute for each life lost in the South Florida shooting. Lane Murdoch, who was 15 and lives in Connecticut, was one of the students who saw events in Florida and felt mobilized to try to make a difference. Living in Connecticut, she, like other U.S. students, has grown up learning lockdown drills since she was in elementary school. She remembers her first at 7 years old. Quote, "We hide in the safest corner, huddled together with our knees up against our chest while our teacher turns off the lights, closes the blinds, and locks the door." She had the idea to launch an online petition for a national student walkout on the 19th, the anniversary of the Columbine attack. The March for Our Lives Twitter account showed a list of the events calling on their followers to support them. That is, capital A, capital M-A-R-C-H, letter 4, capital O-U-R, capital L-I-V-E-S. A March for Our Lives. Another student, hundreds of miles away from Wednesday's attack, Violet Massey-Vereker, had her own provocative idea to draw attention to the reform debate. Following from the success of the hashtag MeToo campaign, she proposed a twist exposing the reality of student and parents' concern with hashtag MeNext. She stood with a sign outside of her school in New York alongside several other students and local parents holding a sign with hashtag MeNext written on it. Others have joined in their social media campaign, posting pictures themselves of their own children online with their own signs. Their Facebook page has grown rapidly. In West Michigan, teenagers from Kalamazoo Central High School started their own petition titled "Students Fighting Guns Since Adults Won't." So far, 71,808 people have signed and climbing rapidly. Julia Kemple Johnson, 17 years old, said the idea came from a discussion between friends day after the Parkland shooting. She said they felt like they were having a discussion about gun violence every other week. Quote, "I can't remember a time when I didn't know about mass shootings," unquote.
They say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS! They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS! They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS! No, they say that no laws could have been able to prevent the hundreds of senseless tragedies that have occurred. We call BS! That us kids don't know what we're talking about, that we're too young to understand how the government works. We call BS! If you agree, register to vote, contact your local congresspeople, give them a piece of your mind.
I have posted a BBC article on my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance, that has all these campaigns and explains them. Go check it out and spread the word. While you're there, go ahead and like my page. I'd greatly appreciate it.
K Voice of Resistance!
Okay. We have seen Republicans rig the system with their gerrymandering, often illegal gerrymandering.
There is gerrymandering to a fare thee well in states controlled by the Republicans.
Listen, political gerrymandering is probably one of the greatest threats to our democracy right now.
Gerrymandering.
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 We have good news.
Oh, yes.
Things are looking up. In 2018, Pennsylvania is getting a new map. Due to the illegally gerrymandered Republican-drawn map that the state has been suffering under for just under 10 years, this purple state has reliably red. It is a swing state where Republicans hold 13 House seats and Democrats only 5.
Oh my god.
And the balance appears all but certain to tip in Democrats' direction.
Oh yeah.
Whining and crying, the Republicans in the Pennsylvania legislature have said that they intend to challenge the new maps in federal court. The Supreme Court previously refused to hear a challenge to the state court's ruling that the previous maps were gerrymandered in a way that violated Pennsylvania's constitution. So, they can try, but I don't sense much success. Who likes weed?
Marijuana, the dried leaves and flowers of the Indian hemp weed, is used in the form of a cigarette. Marijuana smoking, experts point out, can make a helpless addict of its victim within weeks, causing physical and moral ruin and death.
We have news on the weed front. The City Council of Berkeley, California passed a resolution declaring the community a sanctuary for recreational marijuana. The resolution prohibits city agencies' employees from using any city funds or resources to assist in the enforcement of federal drug laws related to cannabis. So, if Polly Pocket's racist little uncle, Jefferson Lugard Sessions, brings the power of the federal government down on Berkeley to root out and arrest arrest those evil drug-addicted ne'er-do-wells smoking that reefer. Then, as the resolution states, quote, the city of Berkeley does not support the cooperation with the Drug Enforcement Administration in its efforts to undermine state and local marijuana laws, unquote. Take that, Jeff Bosesh. Hopefully, they will set an example for many communities to follow.
See how important it is to vote for your own city council?
Also in weed news, in the courts, a suit has been filed in federal district court in Manhattan against disgruntled leprechaun Jeff Zan Beauregard Sessions.
I'm the man of green, come to do no good.
Department of Justice and the Drug Enforcement Administration. And opening arguments have begun. The lawsuit is challenging the constitutionality of classifying marijuana as a Schedule I narcotic under the Controlled Substances Act, the same class as LSD, meth, and heroin. The 98-page lawsuit argues that classifying cannabis as a Schedule I drug is so irrational that it violates the Constitution. Schedule I drugs are those with no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. Frankly, I feel that all drugs should be legalized, but that is another argument. The plaintiffs include former NFL player Marvin Washington, the co-founder of the hemp-based sports performance product company, a 12-year-old who takes marijuana to control her epilepsy, and Jose Baleen, an Iraq War veteran who uses marijuana for PTSD. Besides a host of constitutional arguments, the lawsuit presents a historical world tour of marijuana uses and includes quotes by our founding fathers on their use of the drug. James Madison credited, quote-unquote, sweet hemp for giving him, quote, insight to create a new and democratic nation, unquote. See, we wouldn't even be here were it not for weed.
Just let us have it.
The Declaration of Independence was drafted on hemp paper. The Constitution is printed on hemp paper also. And so are most of our early founding documents from all the states. That thin, crisp paper that Bibles are printed on, that's hemp paper. In addition to our documents, our first flag was on sailcloth, all of which was made from hemp.
Even the clothes on the colonials' backs were made from hemp.
It was a very patriotic thing during the war to be clothed in homespun. Benjamin Franklin, the whole idea was when he went to Europe and was wearing homespun, that was hemp. That was 100% hemp. Homespun has never been anything but hemp.
Let's talk about hemp. Hemp, of course, is a cannabis plant, especially when grown for its fiber. Hemp was planted from day one, it seems. Hemp arrived with the Puritans in colonial America and was planted almost immediately to supply materials such as lines, sails, and other things for the Mayflower. At the same time, all sea vessels carried some stock of hemp seed. Being the fiber of choice, it was quickly spread throughout the colonies. In 1619, Jamestown even announced the order for all farmers to grow hemp seed. And as more colonies popped up, hemp cultivation laws became more mandatory. They were required to grow hemp. Dr. Burke, who is a president of the American Historical Reference Society, has noted 7 of the earliest presidents as hemp smokers. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Thomas Monroe, Andrew Jackson, Zachary Taylor, and Franklin Pierce. According to Dr. Burke, quote, early letters from our founding fathers refer to the pleasures of hemp smoking, unquote. Okay. And I'm going to go into the history of hemp here because it is a perfect example of how big business has been ruining, destroying our country since always. Alternate explains that around the turn of the century, companies like DuPont created chemicals that were used in processing of paper. DuPont also created chemicals used for pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers, which were used extensively by the cotton industry. Cotton is much more chemical and water intensive compared to hemp. While this is going on, William Randolph Hearst invested in timber and mills to produce the paper for his newspaper, which was the largest chain in the U.S. at the time. His investments in the timber industry were backed by Mellon Bank. The U.S. Secretary of Treasury at the time was Andrew Mellon, who happened to own Mellon Bank and was one of the backers of DuPont as well. Mellon's niece was married to Harry Ansler, who, incidentally, was connected to the alcohol prohibition campaign. He was out of a job.
as were everyone else in that sector of the federal government. After the alcohol prohibition and prohibition ended, to keep his family employed, Millen created a new division of the federal government, the Bureau of Narcotics, and he made Harry Anslinger the new head of that program. Also during this time, machinery was being developed to make hemp processing easier and more efficient. This was a threat to paper, chemical, timber, and petroleum industries. Pharmaceutical companies were creating new medicines and drugs and were also threatened by the natural healing properties of the plant known as hemp. Harry Anslinger began looking into rumors about the Mexican population smoking the flowers of the hemp plant because racism. Racism was quite rampant at the time, as always. Anslinger played on that and used the Mexican slang marijuana in place of the word hemp. He spread lies and rumors about blacks and Mexicans becoming violent while smoking it and also labeled it as a narcotic. Hearst newspapers spread the slander and propagated stories about evil marijuana and of people committing rapes and murders while under the influence of marijuana. This, of course, had the papers selling like wildfire, and they failed to mention the everyday uses for hemp, like rope, fuel, textiles, and food. After the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act was passed, Harry Anslinger ordered the hemp prohibition, using the excuse that his agents wouldn't be able to tell the difference between hemp and marijuana, and the farming of hemp made it too difficult to enforce marijuana prohibition. In 1942, hemp prohibition was put on hold to allow farmers to grow hemp to provide the needed fibers to aid in the war effort. But after the war, when hemp was no longer needed, the Air Force and Marines were ordered to destroy all remaining crops. So, when the young pilot, Daddy Bush, bailed out of his burning airplane after the battle over the Pacific, little did he know that parts of his aircraft engine were lubricated with cannabis from hemp seed oil. 100% of his life-saving parachute webbing was made from the U.S.-grown cannabis hemp. Virtually all the rigging and ropes from his ship that pulled him in were made of cannabis hemp. The fire hoses on the ship, as were those in the schools he had attended, were woven from cannabis hemp. And finally, as young George Bush stood safely on the deck, his shoes, durable stitching, was cannabis hemp.
You just blew my fucking mind.
Yet, Bush spent a good deal of his career eradicating the cannabis plant and enforcing laws to make certain that no one will ever learn this information. Possibly even including himself. Hemp. On an annual basis, one acre of hemp will produce as much fiber as 2 to 3 acres of cotton. Hemp fiber is stronger and softer than cotton and lasts twice as long as cotton and will not mildew. Cotton grows only in moderate climates and requires more water than hemp. But hemp is frost tolerant, requires only moderate amounts of water, and grows in all 50 states. Cotton requires large quantities of pesticides, herbicides. 50% of the world's pesticide herbicides are used in the production of cotton. Hemp requires no pesticides, no herbicides, and only moderate amounts of fertilizer. On an annual basis, 1 acre of hemp will produce as much as 2 to 4 acres of trees. And from tissue paper to cardboard, all types of paper products can be produced from hemp. The quality of hemp paper is superior to tree-based paper. Hemp paper will last hundreds of years without degrading. It can be recycled many more times than tree-based paper and requires less toxic chemicals in the manufacturing process than does paper made from trees. Hemp can be used to produce fiberboard that is stronger and lighter than wood. Substituting hemp fiberboard for timber would further reduce the need to cut down our forest. Hemp can be used to produce strong, durable, environmentally friendly plastic substitutes. Thousands of products made from petroleum-based plastics can be produced from hemp-based composites. It also takes years for trees to grow, so they can be harvested for paper and wood. But hemp is ready for harvesting only 120 days after it is planted.
What?
Hemp can grow on most land suitable for farming, while forest and tree farms require large tracts of land available in new locations. Harvesting hemp rather than trees would also eliminate erosion due to logging, thereby reducing topsoil loss and water pollution caused by soil runoff. Hemp seeds contain protein, which is more nutritious and more economical to produce than soybean protein. Hemp seeds are not intoxicating. Hemp seed protein can be used to produce virtually any product made from soybean. Tofu, veggie burgers, butter, cheese, salad oils, cream, milk, etc. Hemp seed can also be ground into nutritious flour that can be used to produce baked goods such as pasta, cookies, and breads. Hemp seed oil can be used to produce non-toxic diesel fuel, paint, varnish, detergent, ink, lubricating oil. Because hemp seeds account for up to half the weight of a mature hemp plant, hemp seed is a viable source for all these products. Just as corn can be converted into clean burning ethanol fuel, so can hemp, because hemp produces more biomass than any other plant species, including corn, that can be grown into a wide range of climates and locations. Hemp has great potential to become a major source of ethanol fuel. Literally millions of wild hemp plants currently grow throughout the U.S. Wild hemp, like hemp grown for industrial use, has no drug properties because of its low THC content. U.S. marijuana laws prevent farmers from growing the same hemp plant that proliferates in nature by the millions. From 1776 to 1937, hemp was a major American crop, and textiles made from hemp were common. Yet, the American Textile Museum, the Smithsonian Institute, and most American history books contain no mention of hemp. The government's war on drugs has created an atmosphere of self-censorship, where speaking of hemp in a positive manner is considered politically incorrect or taboo.
That's stupid!
Which is crap. No other natural resource offers the potential of hemp. Cannabis hemp is capable of producing significant quantities of paper, textiles, building materials, food, medicine, plant detergent, varnish, oil, ink, and fuel. Cannabis hemp, also known as Indian hemp, has enormous potential to become a major natural resource that can benefit both the economy and the environment. But instead, we are holding back medical innovations, deforesting our lands, and using subpar materials, stunning our economy and destroying our environment for nothing more than corrupt politicians, racism, and corporate overlords. So where are we with hemp legalization? There is a bill that has not been brought up for a vote yet. That is Senate Bill 134. Despite bipartisan support, a version of this bill that was introduced in 2013 failed to progress out of the Senate Judiciary Committee before the conclusion of the 113th Congress. In 2017, a Republican representative, James Cormer of Kentucky, sponsored the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2017, with the bipartisan support of 16 congresspeople. Kentucky's two Republican senators, Rand Paul, and yes, even the Tortoise King himself, Mitch McConnell, are also in support of the bill. It was introduced, but has not, as of yet, advanced. Sponsoring Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, had this to say about the federal government's policy in industrial hemp.
The unfortunate reality is that current federal rules prohibit our farmers from growing industrial hemp on American soil. This means that 100% of the hemp used in these products is imported from other nations. The federal ban on hemp amounts, in my view, to a restriction on free enterprise, and it doesn't accomplish anything but stifle job creation and economic growth. We are the world's largest consumer of hemp products, but we are the only major industrialized nation to ban hemp farming. This hasn't always been the case, and it doesn't have to continue to be the case. It was once a booming crop in America, and it can and should be again.
Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, emphasized that, quote, allowing farmers throughout our nation to cultivate industrial hemp and benefit from its many uses will boost our economy and bring much-needed jobs to the agricultural industry, unquote. And here's the thing. 22 states have enacted laws supporting industrial hemp, but because of the stupid federal government does not allow its production outside of academic and government research, it prevents it from being more widely grown by farmers. Think of the possibilities if this is changed. Think of the environmental and financial possibilities if we could get this through. Farmers are struggling in this country? Not anymore. Tired of seeing forest being slaughtered so that we may wipe our asses? Not anymore. If you are a sane person who thinks BS laws need to be drop-kicked, check out rediscoverhemp.com. There you can find hemp facts, information, updates, and how you can get involved. Things we can do is donate to nonprofits fighting to legalize hemp,
Call write and meet our representatives and senators expressing the need to legalize hemp. Write or call in support of state hemp legislation in your state. So far, there have been 22 states to put forth legislation to legalize it, so see what's going on in your state. Register to vote.
Vote!
Stay informed. Write a letter to the editor. Buy hemp. Hemp foods, which are rich in omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, and hemp body care products are carried by large chains such as Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and thousands of smaller independent natural food chains, stores, and co-ops, and even by some mainstream grocery stores. And finally, spread the word. That is the best way to inspire people to this cause. Not only can you dole out plenty of fun facts at parties, it is safer than most political conversations. So let's get it done.
Today's guest is Max Egan.
Hemp is illegal because under the dictates of the current political model, the entire human experience has been reduced to commerce, and our Mother Earth has been reduced to a resource to be used for corporate profit in order to support an economic model that does not service the needs of either humankind nor the earth we live upon in any way, shape, or form. I believe that an end to the prohibition of hemp can be achieved. But the truth is that it can only and will only ever be achieved through action undertaken by the people themselves. It can only be achieved through action by the people simply because most governments are simply too scared to be the first to address the issue. Therefore, it must be done by the people, regardless of legislation enacted by public trustees. Because when such legislation does not serve the best interest of the people, then it must, as a matter of course, be contested by the people. This is called democracy.
Before I go, for nearly 20 years, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has been subject to a ban on funding to study gun violence. In 1996, the NRA convinced Arkansas Representative Jay Dickey to insert language into an omnibus spending bill that stipulated that, quote, none of the funds available for injury prevention and control at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention may be used to advocate or promote gun control, unquote. Now known as the Dickey Amendment. Asshole. This amendment has now appeared in every subsequent appropriations bill for almost 20 years and has had the effect of suppressing nearly all efforts to study the effects of gun violence. Although the NRA characterized funding of any study by the CDC of gun violence as, quote, validating an anti-gun agenda, unquote, even Representative Dickey expresses regret for his amendment and disputes the NRA's highly politicized characterization of scientific activities at the CDC. Even after the horrific massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, Congress was unwilling to remove the Dickey Amendment from the omnibus spending bill. Recent tragic events in Florida require Congress to finally act and remove this amendment. I think it's time we ask our representatives to do just that. It's the least they can do. To finish, a quote by Malcolm X. I learned early that crying out in protest could accomplish things. My older brothers and sister had started a school when sometimes they would come in and ask for a buttered biscuit or something, and my mother impatiently would tell them no. But I would cry out and make a fuss until I got what I wanted. I remember how my mother asked me why I couldn't be a nice boy like Wilfred. But I would think to myself that Wilfred, for being so nice and quiet, often stayed hungry. So early in life, I had learned that if you want something, you had better make some noise. Unquote. Malcolm X. Thank you for sticking with me in this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I've discussed on this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with host Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.